This call is being recorded.
And I wanted to welcome Charlie Schrem to our podcast today, talking about Bitcoin and blockchain technology as well. And Charlie, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me today.
Well, thanks for being here. I know you're involved in a number of projects. I know you're extremely busy, so we really appreciate your time. You are, I wouldn't even say a Bitcoin pioneer. I would say the Bitcoin pioneer. So again, thanks for your time. I have a number of questions to ask you. You have a very interesting path. And for anybody who doesn't know Charlie Schrem and his story, you could probably go to Netflix if you have it and just type in his name and you'll get to know him rather quickly. I'll sort of leave it at that. But I think some of the questions, Charlie, I'd like to ask you today are relevant or relative to some of that content on Netflix, having to do with sort of the narrative behind Bitcoin technology and then blockchain technology as well, which is primarily what the technology that was leveraged in order to sort of realize Bitcoin. So if you don't mind, I'm just going to start maybe with, a little bit about your feeling of how you were portrayed in the Netflix feature movie called Banking on Bitcoin. I just wanted to get your sort of firsthand response to sort of the response to Banking on Bitcoin.
So my wife and I avoided watching it for a while. We didn't usually I honestly hadn't remembered even filming this, that whole period between my arrest and going to prison was like a blur. And once you kind of like, when you get to prison, it's hard to really understand. But when you get to prison, there's like somewhat of a relief, of a breath of fresh air, because you finally have a date that this is all going to be over. There's finally a light at the end of the tunnel. From the moment of the arrest to the whole trial process, you're kind of like, how long is this going to be? 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 30 years? When can I put this whole episode behind me? And until you're sentenced and then you got to get to prison, up until that point, the clock finally starts counting down to the whole thing moving behind you. So we avoided really watching this documentary, but so many people had started telling us this was so good. And people were telling me on the street, we were at a taco restaurant in Atlanta, and the waiter said, "Hey, you look like this guy." And I said, "Oh, that actually is me." And people were telling us, we were in Italy, and people were telling us, picking us out of a crowd. And so we finally decided to watch it, and we loved it. And I think we did a really good job portraying the whole ecosystem around that time. And a lot of the other Bitcoin documentaries and blockchain docs kind of focus on one specific time period, and they become very quickly outdated. But I like this one because it really, you can watch it at any point in the future of history, and you'll see that this, it's really a timeless documentary. So I really liked it. They were very fair, portrayed me in a neutral light, and so I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, I have to say, I mean, even the branding of sort of the label on the front of this movie. So when you click on it, I just wasn't expecting, the kind of depth and storytelling in that particular film. I was really, really surprised. And it was one of the best documentaries I've ever seen, and I've seen a lot. I just feel like, it's promoted in a way where it seems almost instructional just by the label on the front of the movie. But, for anybody listening out there, it's really not that way. It's an extremely well done documentary, and Charlie's a big part of that. So, I'm glad I watched it. Actually, I watched it a couple times.
Yeah, same. We watched it twice. It was good.
Okay, good. So sort of moving on, you were really one of the first public faces of the cryptocurrency phenomenon. But clearly there's another side to an experience or a technology of that sort that typically happens when, a new technology hits the streets and, maybe bad actors get a hold of that. The reason why I even bring this up is I'm sort of looking for, what's the doomsday scenario when it comes to, you know, cryptocurrency or even, you know, a technology called blockchain? You know, what's the downside of that?
The only doomsday scenario I could really think of is if the world governments band together and turn off the internet, because really cryptocurrency traffic is indistinguishable from regular internet traffic, and it was built that way. So when you're using cryptocurrency on your computer and you're sending to an exchange or to someone else's, you know, cryptocurrency to someone else's computer, the data is encrypted. And so, especially if you're using a VPN or anything like that, so there's really no way to shut down cryptocurrency. As long as there's two people willing to use it with each other, that's pretty much how it works.
Yeah. I was reading a Fortune magazine article a while back, and it said that that Bitcoin pioneer Charlie Shrem has a new job and a new mission, strengthening the ecosystem of blockchain assets and just maybe helping to build the future of the internet. So what is blockchain technology from your vantage point?
Blockchain technology can be seen as like a distributed database platform where instead of all data being held on one server, it's actually all the data is being held on everyone's computers that are part of the network. So you kind of look like, you look at PayPal, for example. Blockchain technology can be applied to all different industries and sectors, not just finance. But let's look at finance for a second, because that's what Bitcoin is. You look at a company like PayPal. You create a PayPal account. Your friend creates a PayPal account. You both have PayPal accounts. You fund the account, and you send money from your account to your friend's account. What's happening in that situation is PayPal is maintaining this database, and the database deducts money from your account and credits money to his account. But all this is happening on one centralized database. Same thing with like Visa or MasterCard. When you use your Visa debit card or credit card and you're swiping at a store, what's happening is the money is being deducted from your account and being credited to someone else's account. And Visa and MasterCard are processing billions of transactions a second, but on centralized data centers. These data centers can go down. We saw last year all of MasterCard's credit card and debit card processing was down for a whole day in Canada. Imagine not having access to all of your money because of one centralized party. With blockchain, this database is actually being stored and updated in real time on everyone's computers that are part of the network. So you and I, when I run the software on my computer and you run the software on your computer, when I send you money through Bitcoin, not only is it updated on my database and updated on your database, but in real time, it's updated on millions of other computers worldwide. So we can't counterfeit. No one can freeze our accounts. No one can prevent us from sending money to each other. It's physically impossible. There's no one to stop us, to freeze our accounts, to do this. So it's, in basic terms, Bitcoin is censorship-resistant money. It's the ability for no one to be able to control your money and the monetary policy at the same time. But on top of that, blockchain technology goes a step further. So you have different projects that do kind of different things in the blockchain space, like a decentralized version of Dropbox. So when you use Dropbox, you put all of your data on Dropbox's servers. What happens if Dropbox decides to freeze your account or say, hey, sorry, we're not going to give you access to all of your data? That would be devastating. Dropbox is fully controlled of all of your data in one centralized location. The government can raid all their data centers and we'd all be screwed. I keep data on Dropbox too, but it's convenient. People are building decentralized versions of Dropbox where instead of hosting your data on one centralized computer, your data is being stored on millions of computers around the world encrypted. And then people that are giving up their hard drive space for your own data are getting paid for that. So there's all these different opportunities that you can have in the blockchain space that you can do.
Yeah, we had a podcast yesterday on a similar topic on blockchain technology. It was Vishnu Amlal, former CTO of Telstra. That's the sort of the Verizon version for or telco version for Australia. And he really pioneered blockchain for that particular telco. So he has he had some robust thoughts and opinions and sentiments on, you know, the ups and downs of blockchain technology. But anyway, the title of that segment was The Death of the Middleman, and I think that's really relevant to, you know,
it's really what's happening here.
Exactly. But isn't there an inherent danger in, let's say, financial transactions being completely anonymous, or are they not completely anonymous? I mean, which one is it?
There's a common misconception. Bitcoin is not anonymous. In fact, the current financial system is a lot more anonymous than Bitcoin is. Bitcoin is private, but it's not anonymous. And people that try to use Bitcoin for nefarious purposes are going to get caught. But Bitcoin is not anonymous at all. So, yes, but there is a danger in taking up the middleman, because at the end of the day, what's the point of banks and what's the point of middlemen is they provide us utility, which is a good user experience, and knowing that someone else is there taking care of it. Some people simply aren't ready. Excuse me. Some people aren't ready to take control of their own money. Some people aren't. Excuse me. Some people aren't ready to take that power and take that control. So there's a reason that we keep our money at banks. And I wouldn't say take all of your money today and throw it into Bitcoin. Definitely there's a good idea to take some of your portfolio and put it into various cryptocurrencies. But I wouldn't put it in, put everything in there, because it's always good to diversify all of your assets.
Yeah, if you don't mind, I would like to pick even another vertical that may be more, you know, more mainstream and maybe more digestible for our audience outside of the financial sector. There's a company that you're advising. I don't know if you're currently advising them, you're advising them in the past, but it's a company called Vibrate. Is that pronounced correctly?
Vibrate.
You're essentially eliminating the key middleman, you know, in the music industry. So how does blockchain technology play a role in disrupting the music business?
So what happens is, when a concert, when a venue decides to run a concert, if they're using the Vibrate platform, they can issue tickets on the blockchain. They can also issue paper tickets, just like by using Ticketmaster. But the whole turnkey experience happens with Vibrate, from ticket sales to ticket issuance to tracking to third party and secondary markets, all happening on the blockchain, impossible to counterfeit. And this, usually you'd pay a company like Ticketmaster or StubHub to run this for you and do all the marketing, but also to kind of provide that turnkey experience, and you pay them for it. Vibrate takes that process out. And so it's being done right now in Europe using the Vibrate platform. It's being done with a lot of EDM music. So there's a famous DJ Umek, who's running his whole tour on the Vibrate platform, and he's bringing a lot of people to it.
Hmm. That's interesting. There's a publisher called CoinDesk that I know you're familiar with. You said this a while back. You said, "I'm trying to invest and help companies that are trying to apply blockchain technologies to different industries." Which industries do you think will be impacted sooner than later by blockchain?
Well, obviously the finance industry has been the most impacted. You'll see that with remittances. You'll see that with banking. You'll see that with all aspects of the financial services world. You'll see projects like Salt Lending be able to issue loans based on your crypto holdings. So you don't have to sell crypto anymore. You can actually just, loan money, borrow money from them. You're going to see companies where there's a lot of middlemen, like insurance companies, the music industry, the airline industry, hopefully, file storage, data, internet services, anything that's related to the internet, you're going to see that be disrupted first. The physical stores, like the mom and pop physical stores, those are going to be like the last ones, because if you recall, those stores were the last ones to even like take credit cards. It was always the internet companies first.
Mm-hmm. There's still some analysts out there, not many, but there's still some analysts and experts out there that claim and that the Bitcoin bubble will burst and it'll really never be a mainstream currency. What do you have to say about that?
People have been calling Bitcoin death since I got involved 9 years ago. I mean, give me something else already. Like, how many times can you say that? There's been already like 6 or 7 Bitcoin bubbles. That's what happens. It goes up and it goes down. It goes up and it goes down. There's never going to be this epic Bitcoin bubble. The price is 5,600 right now. It can go to 7,000 and then dump to 4,000 and then it can consolidate and then it can go up again in a year. That's just the way it works. I've seen so many bubbles already.
Yeah. I'm going to pull out another quote out of that coin, out of that publication called CoinDesk. He said, I'm no longer operating mainly for myself, but instead I want to use my talents to strengthen the crypto community. Where did that comment come from? What were you trying to say there?
Can you repeat the comment again?
Sure. I'm no longer operating mainly for myself, but instead I want to use my talents to strengthen the crypto community. When you said I'm no longer operating for myself, what were you trying to, what was your sentiment there?
Well, I was trying to say that instead of looking out for my own interests, I realized that my best interests are that of the whole Bitcoin community, so, and crypto community. So if we can work on projects that strengthen the whole thing, then my best interest would be in that.
Yeah. In the middle of 2014, I'm not exactly sure when when your sentence came down and when you ended up in federal prison. But in the middle of 2014, sort of in the midst of your trial, a journalist asked you if you still wanted to evangelize Bitcoin. And at that time, you said that Bitcoin would change the world. And clearly, you still feel the same way. But just to reiterate, in case there's anything else you wanted to add, 4 years later now, what's your thought there, and what's sort of the evolution from that comment 4 years ago until now?
Bitcoin is still, going to be changing the world more so than it was before. As we see now, it's really growing like crazy. So I honestly didn't think it would happen this fast.
Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to clear up before we actually go here, Satoshi Nakamoto, is he real or not?
Who?
Does that person exist?
Who?
Satoshi Nakamoto,
the founder of Bitcoin, of course.
Okay, so he exists because in the documentary it wasn't entirely clear whether that was a real person or if that was his real name or not.
We don't know. No one knows who Satoshi is. Anyone claiming to be Satoshi is a fraud, unless they can actually prove it.
Interesting. So he built a decentralized system that no one would own, but anyone could participate in. Is that essentially the idea behind blockchain?
Yep.
Okay, that's interesting. You would think there would be some kind of spin-off documentary about Satoshi, no? Possibly.
There have been books about it.
Yeah. Well, that would be interesting. All right, well,
there's articles written about it.
Yeah. I really wanted to cover from your vantage point where you saw blockchain technology going. I think you've covered that. You talked about a number of verticals that it would impact. And of course, you also talked about Bitcoin and sort of the evolution of Bitcoin and sort of where Bitcoin is today. By the way, what is Bitcoin worth today? The numbers I have.
5,600.
5,600.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's up from what? Let's say 4 years ago.
A dollar.
A dollar 4 years ago.
Okay. No, I mean 4 years ago. What year is it now? 2013, December 2013 was the height of the last bubble. So the price, the last bubble, the price pumped all the way to 1,200.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was the crazy pump. So all through 2013, there was a run up. So from $120 to $1,200. And then over the course of 2014, it slowly bled all the way down to about $250, which was the previous bubble high. So usually that's what happens with all these bubbles in Bitcoin. The price, you know, pumps over the course of 6 months, a year, 2 years, and then eventually it pops. And then it goes down to the previous level, the previous bubble high. So
sure.
We'll see what happens. But now we're seeing bubbles within bubbles. So you
right.
Hard to really know. I mean, the stock market it's in an epic bubble. Yesterday I sold all my positions in the stock market. It's completely gone.
Uh-huh.
I'm completely out of the stock market.
That's interesting.
And it's such a, it's, yeah, it's, I'd rather buy real estate.
I hear you. What about the energy market? Vish, I mentioned Vish yesterday from Telstra talking about the impact of blockchain, not only on the stock market, but on the energy market. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, it's a cool idea. The energy market could be really cool. For example, what people are doing now in Europe, and I've seen test cases in Switzerland and some other places, Middle East, Mongolia, China. For example, if I have solar panels on my house, I can actually sell energy to my neighbor without using a middleman, using blockchain tech.
Yeah. But I was thinking more of like energy trading. Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah. It's something like that. Like you can trade. So if I have excess energy, or I want to have competition in the energy space, now people can buy and sell energy with each other. You're talking about more like commodities like oil and things like that, or?
Yeah.
You can do anything like that with trading.
Well, I mean, electricity. Actually, I was really thinking about electricity. But yeah, I mean, eliminating the middleman in the energy market would be hugely impactful, I would imagine.
Sure.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. Well, we'd love to follow up with you, maybe in the coming months. About number one, the evolution of Bitcoin, but also the impact of blockchain. It's just something that everywhere we turn, we're hearing about blockchain this, blockchain that, and there's legitimacy behind that because it really is impactful. So, again, we appreciate your time and being with us. We know you're a busy guy, and we'll be following your Twitter feed as we do, and we hope you follow ours as well. And we'll talk very soon, Charlie.
Sounds great.
All right,
thank
have
you
a
so
great
much.
Day. Congratulations on getting married as well.